Welcome to the Powered by Transova podcast, where Transova team members and industry experts will cover how our reproductive toolbox of embryo transfer, in vitro fertilization, sorted semen, and cloning technologies can multiply the success within your livestock breeding program. Throughout our series, we will also cover a wide array of topics such as frequently asked questions, management and care advice, as well as client and location highlights.
Welcome back to the Powered by Transova podcast. Super excited to kick off, season three now, I guess, this fall, Sarah?
Yeah, but who's counting?
Yeah, who's counting? We don't even need to do seasons. Pretty excited about this episode today. We've got a frequently asked questions, FAQ, submitted by our listeners and our client service team of questions that they get on a regular basis. And to answer those questions, we've got Dr. Ryan Fairbairn and Taryn Kaufman from our West Coast team. Thank you guys for joining us. Why don't we start off and have you guys introduce yourselves and tell about your roles at Transova.
Yeah, thanks for having us. So my name is, like she said, Dr. Ryan Fairbairn. I am currently serving as our location leader for our California location. And I am the sole veterinarian out here currently, covering a lot of the work for our California region here. So my day-to-day primarily is just going out to do the OPUs and embryo transfer work and then helping to build the business out here. I grew up actually on the East Coast. I grew up in Pennsylvania. Did my undergraduate there at Penn State, and then went to Purdue for my veterinary school, and then started with Transova directly out of vet school. I've been with Transova for about 7 years now. I originally started for the first couple of years I spent in Iowa and South Dakota, and then I transitioned out here to California when they needed some help, and I really fell in love with the clients and the work out here, and been here ever since.
I'm Taryn Kaufman. I am the client service rep for the West, one of the spots on the West Coast. I handle scheduling for Washington, Idaho, Oregon, Utah, and I'm also handling Colorado and Wyoming as well. I have been with Transova for a year and a half now. I completed my undergraduate study at Washington State University and got a job in the field after school, and then have transitioned into working with Transova since then.
Well, we appreciate both of you coming on, especially for this FAQ episode. I don't know if you, Emily, if you would call this the hot seat, but there's a wide variety of questions that came in for this FAQ session. So we'll go ahead and get started with some of these questions. They're in no order of importance from most important to least important. They're kind of just all over the place. So we'll start with question one. Is there such thing as too much FSH?
Yeah, I'd absolutely say so. Especially with conventional ET, you hear a lot about overstimulating donors, and that can really affect your results. But I definitely think that coincides with IVF as well. You don't see it as much, but what you get is an overstimulation of that donor where her follicles get really large. The follicles can be fragile, so you don't get as good of a collection rate. And I don't know if there's ever been a study done on it, but I believe that there's a effect on the development rates if you give them too much FSH as well.
Perfect. So I guess, playing off of that FSH theme right now, FSH says not to use on pregnant cows. Are you sure it's okay to continue giving shots?
Yeah, absolutely. We've done it I've been with the company for 7 years, and I can't say that I've seen factually any kind of negative results. That, obviously doing a pregnant donor through IVF, it does come with some risk, but is that coming from the FSH? I don't believe so. I feel like the FDA or whoever regulates that kind of stuff has to put those on there, because I don't think there's been a detailed study done on whether there's any kind of embryo toxicity with the FSH drug on those pregnant donors. But from my experience, I have not seen it affect any. And those donors are continually going through follicular waves through their pregnancy. They obviously don't show a heat, but due to the hormones of the pregnancy there, but they have their own inherent FSH going on through that process as well. And so we're just kind of helping to boost those levels to kind of get some higher production out of that donor.
It looks like we've got another question that's still kind of in that same ballpark of the stimulation theme. Will stimulated IVF donors make embryos that have a higher pregnancy rate than non-stimulated embryos or donors, I guess?
No, that's it's definitely a hot topic. The stimulated versus non-stimulated donors these days. The price of FSH just keeps going up. And so it's definitely a high cost for this program, for anyone's program. And so people question whether or not they can have success without that stimulation or with it. And as far as a conception rate, I don't believe that there's any difference between a stimulated donor or a non-stimulated donor embryos that it produces. An embryo is an embryo. I wish we had an IVF embryologist on here that could coincide that, but we have a very standardized grading system with our embryos. And so if we freeze those embryos, we believe that is a quality embryo that can make a pregnancy. And whether it comes from a stimulated donor or not, I don't think there's a difference. The big difference comes between the stimulated donors is in whether those oocytes are going to become an embryo or not. But once it gets to that embryo stage, I personally don't believe that there's any difference on it in the conception rates. I don't know if there's been a full study done on that, but anecdotally, I do not believe that there's a difference.
I think before we keep digging into these questions, it probably would be good to kind of hit on when is it appropriate to use FSH versus not, and how we go about determining the shot schedules, I guess, or if they even get a shot schedule.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's a very donor dependent and program dependent. If you know, it's something that I think Transova does really well is that we can work with you and your program on what's going to be best for you. And it depends on what you're doing with that embryo. If you're in a commercial situation where those embryos are just going into your own cows and just making calves, you might do just fine unstimulated. Cutting costs there on that FSH drug, dropping back maybe one, two embryos per donor on the average there. But if that works for you, that's great. But if you're selling these embryos, or if you're trying to get some high dollar calves to sell, then that maybe that one or two extra is going to pay for that, the drug of the FSH. And so that's kind of where we'll work with you on what's best there. And then also, as I said, it's very donor dependent. And so as we're going through the program, if we see the unstimulation is not working on her, or if she needs a little boost in her drug dosages, we can adjust as we go there. I know Taryn works with quite a few unstimulateds up there.
Yeah, we run a lot of unstimulated up here in Washington and Oregon. Most of them are dairy donors, some beef. We have a lot of good beef producers out here that they don't feel they need the FSH. Their cows do just well for them, like you said, Ryan, within a herd where that 1 to 2 embryo loss per donor isn't significant for them, where the cost of FSH, with it continuing to rise, they're seeing the production that they're hoping to get, and even beyond that. So they're not looking to stimulate, as well as less time through the chute, less donor handling. Some of these donors, they don't do well with the extensive shot schedules. And so running them unstimulated and only bringing them in on collection day is more beneficial for them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I've actually got a few beef guys down here that they swear by the unstimulated now. It used to be back in the day, like a few years ago when I was first getting started, I would cringe anytime somebody told me they wanted to run unstimulated. I just felt like we weren't going to get the same amount of success with it. It makes the collections harder, all that kind of stuff. But the technology has advanced so much that I really think it's not comparable, but at least we can get some success with it. Some of these guys, even they'll swear they get better conception rates with that unstimulated on those beef donors. I don't know how true that is. That's pretty anecdotal. It's definitely an option.
I know from a marketing perspective, when Emily and I are trying to put out information, we like things that are black and white, and the FSH versus no FSH seems to not be one of those black and white issues. And so if you still have questions, I think the best thing is to, you know, reach out to your CSR or your professional services individual, just because like they've already mentioned, it's very donor specific, very situation specific. Very location specific. So if you still have questions, just make sure you're having that conversation, because it's not a, black and white issue.
Very much so, yeah.
So before we, you know, change subjects here away from FSH and shots, one of the questions that came in was, is it okay to give shots at different times than are listed on the shot schedules provided by Transova?
It's really important to follow that schedule as close as you can to it, to really get it kind of within that 12-hour window, 8 to 12 hours apart on the shots. That definitely plays a big part in getting the most success. You want to set these donors up for success from the beginning. And if we can follow those protocols as closely as possible, I think that's going to be your best bet.
Moving on to our next question. We know a lot of producers use IVF for the kind of added benefits. And we've had some episodes prior to this about, you know, embryo transfer versus IVF. One of the benefits, and maybe you can answer this question, it is, how young can we IVF a dairy or beef heifer?
I prefer to say that we would recommend staying older than 8 months on those dairy heifers, but we can do younger than that. You do see a little bit of a drop off in your development rates with the younger heifers, but you can still have some success in those younger donors. But I typically recommend older than 8 months.
The size of the heifers too comes into play. If these heifers are super small reproductively and systematically, it's just not best for them to be aspirated at that time. Being armed that young, you know, there can be some detrimental effects as well.
Would you still keep that 8 month time frame on a beef heifer, Ryan and Taryn, or would you say you could go younger or older? Or
Yeah, I'd say so. As long as honestly, with the beef heifers, there's such a strong push for as young as they can go in the dairy industry because of genomics. So like as soon as they get those numbers on those heifers, if you've got a high genomic heifer, you're going to want to run her as soon as you can. And so that's why there's such a push in there too on that side. But it translates as well to beef heifers. I do as long as they're starting the cycle, then they're mature heifers. Then you can have success with it. Like I said, there is a negative side to running them young in that your development rates can go down on them, but it's you can still have success. So I can't tell you not to. I guess one on that line, one question I get a lot is it going to impact their future? Giving them those drugs, and I can't say no, absolutely not. That it's not going to happen, but it's. From my experience, it doesn't have a large impact on negatively impacting their future conception or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up, Ryan, because that always seems to be a question that we get, and I'm surprised that it's not on our list. So, right. Yeah, everybody wants to know what are the long-term effects, you know, especially if you've had a bad experience with ET or even IVF. They want to know what are my chances of risk on either procedure. So I'm glad that you threw that in.
Yeah, it's definitely it's a logical concern to have, like as with anything, but we're fighting against nature here doing this procedure. And so it can definitely have an impact, but not, it's a minimal enough impact that it's worth doing if that heifer is something you want to run. You know, there's always the risk of injury, as Taryn mentioned, but I've done quite a few of these procedures over the last 7 years and have seen minimal of those kinds of impacts on those heifers.
I think overall, the best thing to do is if you have a young donor that you're questioning, you know, talk to your client service rep and just get them scheduled to bring them along. If you bring in a trailer load of other donors, bring them along and have the vet take a look. You know, they can examine them right then and there and see if they're physically able to be aspirated as well.
Perfect. Thanks for answering those questions. And thank you, Ryan, for bringing up the other good point to that question as well. Kind of staying on the same lines, we're jumping around in our questions a little bit, but how soon after calving can you perform IVF on a donor?
Yeah, that's another great question. So after she calves, she has to go through a process what's called involution. And that's where, so the uterus obviously expands quite a bit in size as she's carrying that pregnancy to term. And so in order for us to be able to physically get to those ovaries, that uterus kind of has to come back down to size. And I typically recommend waiting at least one heat cycle to bring them in after pregnancy. I have, I might get in trouble for saying this, I've had some dairy guys bring in cows a week after they calved, and I was able to do it. But I definitely don't recommend that if possible. They, you know, it's pregnancy is a difficult process on these cows, and they can have, you know, they're some level of metritis or inflammation of that uterus is going on and of the vagina. And so you're posing more of a risk than necessary if you bring them in that early. It is possible, but yeah, I typically recommend waiting at least that one heat cycle after the pregnancy to bring them in.
From the client service side of things, typically our answer follows right along with Ryan there. 30 to 45 days post-calving is kind of that good interval.
I'm glad that you agree with him, Taryn. Otherwise, we might be a little nervous.
Having some issues.
Yeah. I guess on the flip side of that, you know, how soon after calving can you set up a recipient for it to take another embryo?
Yeah, absolutely. That's another big question that we'll get. And our typical recommendation is 60 days post-calving for basically all those same lines. These are, you know, we put a lot of work and money and effort into making these embryos. We want to set them up for the best success to making that a next step further into turning that into a pregnancy. And so we need to give those recips time to recover from that pregnancy. That they can accept that embryo and carry the term.
Here's another question, and we'll see if Ryan and Taryn are on the same page on this one as well. What is the average number of embryos collected per donor?
That's good. That's kind of a loaded question there too. It definitely, there's so many factors that go into that. If you're going strictly by the numbers, I'd say like we average about 20 oocytes per collection on those donors. And then with our average 30% embryo development rate, that's 6 embryos per donor is the strict average there. But that's, you know, if you're looking at beef versus dairy and Bos indicus versus Bos taurus and unstimulated versus stimulated, or what type of semen you're using. There's so many factors that can affect that average and take it up and down. But I'd say anywhere between 4 and 6 is the acceptable average. Can definitely go higher than that and definitely can go lower than that, but that's where I'd say we end up.
I think on that note, I do agree with that, Ryan, but it is very important here to note that it is an average and it is dependent, very dependent on donor. And like Ryan said, you know, the different types of collections that we're doing, even as well as your management and your feed. So, you know, there's just so many factors that affect the reproductive system in general. So we do have those averages, but it is an average, and to take it kind of with a grain of salt.
I think that's a really good point, Taryn, because I know there's times when we have a donor that does exceptionally well and people are wanting to put that information out there. Like, look how good this donor did. But, you know, it's kind of about setting client expectations, because if they see only the good results or the very best of the best results, then are we setting the wrong expectations? Because we do sometimes, you know, and it's not any good for anybody, but we do have times when they're not so good. So I think it's important. Thank you, Taryn, for pointing out that it is an average and it's not always, you know, going to be that number specifically.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of on that line. There's every donor is born with a specific antral follicle count. And so she's born with a certain set amount of follicles, and some are born with a ton of follicles and some are born with not that many. And it doesn't mean that they can't have success, but it's so donor dependent that it, based on their genetics and nutrition and everything that's happening with that donor, it strongly affects the results you're going to get by them. And so it's, you can't look at one donor and expect like, why am I not getting those same results with mine? And so it's very dependent on a lot of different factors.
Yeah, you can only manipulate Mother Nature so much before exactly. She reminds you that she's the one in charge.
Yeah.
So taking a little turn here of, you know, donor specific things, the next couple of questions are about setting up accounts with Transova. Maybe Taryn, you could talk about what My Transova is. How do people get in an account? And do they need a separate account for every single Transova location that they work with?
Yeah. So first off, kind of talking about separate accounts for Transova. At Transova as a whole, you only need one account. Every client service rep can look up through the Transova database. And so your one account is good for you at any location. The easiest way to have an account looked up is by providing your client code, if you know it. If you don't, the next best thing is your farm or ranch name or your full name and phone number. If you provide your client service rep with that information, or any client service rep that you get on the phone, they can look up your account to answer any questions or create any shipments or any other requests that you may have. As far as using MyTransova is a website that we have where you can view your inventories. You can view your embryo inventory, your semen inventory. You can view your donors that you have given us information for, your fertilizations, your statements and invoices, and you can even make an online payment on there as well. Your client service rep can get you set up with that. Just put in your request and then you'll receive an email to set up your password with the login link as well.
That's good information. And I know Emily and I, a few years ago, we did some client testimonials, and obviously, you know, people talked about our services and about our team, but the thing that kind of came up from all of the interviews that we did was how much they appreciate MyTransova and the information that it provides them at their fingertips. It's a great record keeping, kind of data driven platform. And so if you don't have an account or you would like one, like Taryn gave all the great information on how to go about getting set up with one.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. It's nice at your fingertips. You know, sometimes you reach out to your client service rep and you might be needing the information, you know, right now. It's super, super important on your end. And it's always important to us as well, but we also service many, many clients. And so we may not be able to get you that information, you know, right then and there. It may take a little bit longer. So MyTransova is a great resource for that. It's just right there for you.
Yeah. And the other thing we should mention too is that MyTransova has gotten a little bit of a facelift in the last couple months, and they're continuing to make a lot of great upgrades to that. And I think, Sarah, we've talked about having Megan and Brad on eventually to kind of go through all of those updates and give people the full rundown of MyTransova once that all the upgrades are finished. So that'll be exciting.
Absolutely. I know there's been some really good things about it, so it'll be exciting to share the improvements with everybody. Next question goes, I think maybe to Taryn, but we'll see. Maybe Ryan can weigh in too. What's the best way to set up a consult for small ruminant work, changing gears a little bit?
Currently with small ruminant work, our guru is Stanton Warren. You can reach out to any of the client service reps, or you can contact Stanton directly. He can be reached at 1-800-372-3586. And Stanton can take care of any small ruminant needs you have. Or like I said, any client service rep can direct you to him as well.
Yeah, that is a program that we continue to expand, and Stanton does a good job of managing that. So if anybody has questions, Stanton is the guy to reach out to. So with that, I guess to Taryn, this probably is a question for you of maybe go into the importance of calling ahead or communicating with your client service rep when it comes to picking up inventory or recipients or shipping of materials. You know, what all goes into that? Because I know it's more than just showing up and asking for your stuff.
Yeah, I think the main thing to hit off the bat with that one is that Transova, we want to provide the best service for you. An advance notice is always the best way to ensure a smooth and timely pickup for anything, whether it's recips, embryo, semen, anything, you know, that you may need. A heads up is just always best. Especially at the main Iowa location, there are multiple storage locations there for inventory, and it may not be directly at the main farm where you're going to be picking it up. So we ask for at least a 24-hour notice. That way we can ensure that your inventory is at the main farm or at the Washington lab or at the Texas lab, wherever you may be picking it up. And so that heads up just allows us and our team to be prepared for you as well. Recips need to be sorted ahead of time. So recip sort days are on Wednesday. So we have to have those requests in by Tuesday to sort the Wednesday before you plan to pick up. It's important to have recips sorted ahead of time, as There are so many people coming in and out that if you just show up and ask for your recips, it's not going to be something that we can get to. The working cattle in itself is a big task, and we want to ensure that it's smooth for them as well as smooth for our team.
Yeah, I would say as well that, especially on the embryo side too, we take extra steps to make sure that you are getting exactly what you're asking for. And so I know the girls in our lab at least ask for at least a 24-hour notice if you're going to be picking up a shipment of embryos, just so that they can have time to go through the inventory, find where your embryos are located, pull them out, and they check each individual cane to make sure the correct embryos that are supposed to be in there are in that cane. Because mistakes can happen. We make every step possible to avoid any of those mistakes, but we always want to make sure that's part of the reason we do this double checking process as we're loading out embryos. So that's why it's we prefer that people don't show up and ask to the office and ask, hey, can I get these embryos? Because it does take a little bit of time to get that done. And so
it sounds like it's nice to give a heads up, but a lot of quality control as well, which is appreciated, I think, both from a Transova standpoint, but also a client's point of view as well. Kind of a win-win.
Absolutely.
Speaking of giving a heads up, let's pretend I'm really indecisive. Why do you have to know my sire choices ahead of time? Why can't you just wait until that moment?
Taryn can probably take this, but I'd add in that it's with a quality control issue there is that our client service reps make those schedules ahead of time. And so we kind of need to line up those donors as the best way possible. Taryn, you can elaborate on that.
Yeah. I reached out to a fellow client service rep and I loved her answer. So I'm actually going to read this one word from word from her. One of the reasons is when creating our shoot schedules, we try to prioritize certain types of semen being used together. So to accommodate for timing for the labs, our reverse sort may need to be after a certain time. So we schedule donors and along with sire choices based off of sort capacity. If clients are sharing semen, whether this is they're asking to share semen or it just happens that we're running the same semen that day and reach out to let our clients know, hey, you can share this sort capacity as well. We only have so many sort spots. And so we have to make sure we know your sire choice ahead of time to ensure you get a spot on that schedule. As well as paperwork for fertilization is run the day of OPUs. So knowing your sire choice ahead of time allows for fewer mistakes within the lab. Less revisions to put in the night before, and just all that stuff to make sure that we do have the correct sire choice that you're wanting before we run paperwork and before semen is pulled and thawed and used to fertilize those oocytes.
Yeah, we don't want to thaw anything and then somebody changed their mind because there's no going back after that. I guess along those lines too, the next question is, why can't I use two sires if my donor has 20 oocytes, anything less than 40?
These embryos, these oocytes, when they come out, they are surrounded with what's called a cumulus cells. And we put that entire, the oocyte and the cumulus cells goes into that MAT tube. And those, they work better as a group in there. And so there's kind of a happy medium with those oocytes in there. You don't want too little and you don't want too many. And so we have always had that standard 40 as our cutoff. We don't want more than 40 in there. But the more you have in there in that range gives them more support as they go through the maturation process and into fertilization. I can't speak too much on the process inside the IVF lab. If we had somebody on there that can elaborate on that further, but yeah, it's more for the health of those oocytes to get the best results we can possible for you. And that's why we typically landed on that 40 as our cutoff for whether or not we're going to split them. If you wanted to use two sires on a lower number than that, we would have to split them into two different tubes. And so then you have less oocytes together in those tubes.
Okay. Looks like we've got one more question maybe. The last one that I have on this list is, what are the preferred days/time range for recip heats when you're setting up for a fresh transfer?
Yeah, sure. So through the development process of these embryos, they get fertilized on day one, and then those embryos come out on day six and a half or day seven. And so technically speaking, those embryos are 7 days old when they come out of our incubators. And if they're going to go in fresh, or even if we freeze them and then thaw them afterwards, we want to match their age with the age of that uterine environment, if that makes sense. And so if she was in heat a week ago, so our typical time range for our recips that we tell our clients is we want them between 6.5 and 8 days post their estrus state or their heat that they had. And that's because we're trying to match the age of that embryo with her uterine environment. So we want her, if she was had a normal pregnancy happening, there would be a 7 day embryo or 6.5 to 8 day embryo where we're putting that embryo. And so she's at her most ready to accept that embryo at that time period. And so if you say you had an implant date for a Wednesday, you would want her to have been in heat that previous, what would have been Tuesday morning to the Thursday afternoon. And it kind of changes a little too between IVF and ET, or the conventional embryos. The IVF embryos tend to be a little older when they come out of the incubator. Our ideal embryo coming out of the incubator is a stage 7 embryo, whereas in a conventional flush, the more ideal, I'm using air quotes when I say ideal, is the stage 4 embryo there. And so they're a little younger when you're going conventional flushing there. So we do kind of want those, the IVF embryos, we really prefer a 7 or an 8 day heat, to like a Tuesday or a Wednesday if you had a Wednesday implant, or you could look at the Thursdays as well for a conventional flush.
One of the best ways to ensure that your transfers are set up properly and you have the correct heats for your embryos is to reach out to the Transova team or for a schedule, or reach out to your embryologist, whoever is doing your transfers for you. And they can help you get your recips set up and heats lined out to match your stages of embryos as well.
Perfect. Well, thank you guys. We threw a lot at you, a lot of good questions, but I think a lot of good info. One more question here that I've got that wasn't on the list that I provided you. So
we didn't provide it.
What's that?
Off the top of our head.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess what is one thing that you wish people or clients knew about Transova or IVF in general?
I'm going to go just because this one's fresh on the top of my head. And this one is silly and super small, but we've been doing the term Tuesdays on our Instagram. And one of them is oocyte. It is an oocyte, not an ovocyte or an ochrocyte, or it's spelled a little differently, but go check out the Instagram.
I think my mom calls them oocytes.
We've heard a whole bunch of different variations, but I want to give Taryn bonus points for paying attention to our social media.
Our interns will be very happy about that. That was their idea. Ryan, anything that you want to add?
Yeah, I guess we kind of harped on it a little, but there's so many factors that go into these processes, and just be willing to look at every possible factor when we're troubleshooting some poor results and that kind of stuff. Yeah, I just say that's the biggest thing. We're fighting with nature here, and we are doing the absolute best that we can when we're trying to get you those good results. And so just be open to suggestions and opportunities like that as we're going through that kind of stuff.
Awesome. Well, lots of great information. Thank you guys again for sharing and spending the time with us today. I know it's super busy and you're 3 hours behind Sarah and I, so I appreciate you guys taking the time.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having us on here.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having us today.
You're welcome. Well, I'm sure we'll get you guys back on eventually too. So hopefully you didn't hate it too much, but we will... put Ryan and Taryn's contact info in the episode comments. So if anybody has further questions, feel free to reach out. Reach out through our social media channels, or just give us a call at any of our locations, and we'll get you hooked up with the right people to answer your questions. So thank you guys again, and we will catch you next time on the Powered by Transova podcast.
We appreciate you tuning in to Transova. If you have any topics you'd like to hear more about, send an email to moreinformation@transova.com. Thank you.